All right, time for Baldry's Beat. Keith Baldry, Legislative Bureau Chief for Global News. Good morning, Keith.
Good morning.
Let's talk. Justin Trudeau now has invited the premiers for a healthcare summit here. Wow.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal. February 7th, he's finally announced that he'll finally meet with the premiers to discuss this. The premiers call for a huge injection of federal money into the healthcare system. Want to go from 23% current federal contribution to north of 30%. $27 billion, I think, is what we're talking about here. The feds have signaled they don't want to give money over with no strings attached. They want right. some sort of say in how this money's spent. One of the things that is on the table is the federal role in establishing a data collection. So everyone is singing from the same song sheet when it comes to statistics and such. Doug Ford in Ontario, Francis Legault in Quebec were the first to sort of break from the common front of the premiers a few weeks ago, saying, yeah, sure, okay, we can live with some strings attached if we get more money. And I think you're going to see other premiers fall in line. So we're not going to have a deal on February 7th, but it's the start of talks.
Let's have a listen to what Trudeau had to say on this.
This morning, I invited the premiers to join me in Ottawa on February 7th for a working meeting on health care. It'll be an opportunity to share with them our plans to support the healthcare systems across the country.
Long time coming. There's been a lot of pressure here on the feds here to do something here about healthcare.
Yeah, and we've always speculated it was going to be closer to the next election rather than farther away. So again, this will be the start of a conversation. I suspect there'll be at least one more meeting after that before a deal is finally hammered out. And perhaps it's hammered out in sort of stages, fits and starts.
In the lead up to another election.
Yeah, wow, what a shocker.
How cynical of you to think that election
timing. Well, I think you'll probably see Ottawa contribute some money fairly quickly to the provinces, but in terms of getting to the final number, I don't think that's going to happen overnight.
Yeah, you mentioned that the premiers of Ontario and Quebec were the first to kind of cave on this and say, well, we're willing to live with some federal strings attached to this money. Adrian Dix, the BC health minister, I think had been pretty consistent that they were resisting, BC was resisting any kind of earmarks on this money, right?
Under the Constitution, provinces are responsible for healthcare in determining how the money is spent. Ottawa has been creeping into the provincial area. They're talking about national pharmacare program, national dental program. So there's always been this tug of war and tension between the federal government and the provinces when it comes to who's running the healthcare system. It's clear the provinces do run the healthcare system, but Ottawa's taking the view, well, if you want a massive injection of cash, $27 billion, we should have some say in how that money's spent. So the provinces have pushed back, and now they're not pushing back quite as much.
$27 billion. Wow, that's like an annual number, right? This is $27 billion every year. Yeah, it probably keeps going up.
It's a percentage. The provinces want the feds. When Medicare was first established, when the public healthcare system was established in the 1960s, 50% was paid for by Ottawa, 50% was paid by the provinces. That equation has changed drastically to a 75-25 or even a 77-23 type split. And the provinces are saying, you've got to come up to the plate with more money like you did in the past. It started to be changed at various administrations over the years. Paul Martin, John Chrétien, Stephen Harper all changed the funding formula. And the provinces, as healthcare costs just keep growing up because of technology, aging population, population growth, all putting pressure on the healthcare system, increasing costs, the provinces are saying enough's enough. You've got to come up with more money on the federal end.
Okay. Vancouver Mayor Ken Sim yesterday, his State of the City address to a business audience in Vancouver. And one of the big applause lines that he had in that speech, Keith, was a promise to get rid of the controversial 25-cent disposable cup fee in Vancouver by this summer. So I think that's kind of a no-brainer for him in that direction. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think Ken Sim and his party are signaling they want to get back to basics, you know, just fix the potholes.
Really? I heard him say he wanted us to be more like Austin, Texas.
Well, I think
Miami.
I think you're going to see a less intrusive administration on I wouldn't say goofy things, but things that aren't really attached and to the typical notion of City Hall, and the cup fee is a good example of that.
Yeah.
You know, where do we elect politicians to come up with ideas like that? Or we elect politicians to basically fix the streets, fix the neighborhoods, get things done on a normal basis rather than adding things on that we don't really on top of mind when we go to the ballot box.
Especially when that cup fee has no measurable kind of benefit or outcome. Like, you know, there's been no indication that this has dramatically reduced the amount of garbage going into landfill.
It seemed like a cash grab to most people.
Right.
And really not really something you associate with your city hall politician.
I spoke to Brad West about it on a recent show, the mayor of Port Coquitlam, to get his take on this, because he told me that after Vancouver brought in their cup fee, there was a restaurant in Poco that started to charge the fee. They put a sign up in their window saying this is a municipal fee. He said he sent his staff down there and said, hang on, we don't have this cup fee in Port Coquitlam, so knock it off. Now, I asked him what he thought of the Vancouver cup fee, and here's what he told me.
People are being nickel and dimed. It's a cash grab. And they dress it up as some big environmental act. You know, from what I hear, you know, they have trouble getting the recycling picked up in Vancouver. Maybe that should be the priority.
Oh, I've long said, Brad, keep an eye on Brad West. This is a politician that's, I think, going places, speaks for a lot of people. He's very much of the view, I've talked to Brad West many times about this, he's much of the view, stick to the basics. Pick up your recycling. Pick up the garbage. Fix the potholes.
Yeah.
Make the streets safe. You know, fix the traffic problems. The basic stuff that City Hall does. Don't get into these areas that are sort of touchy-feely. And as he points out, he labels it a cash grab as well, with no discernible impact on the environment.
Yeah, I mean, if you could come up with a program that could reduce garbage going to the landfill, I think that would be great, right? But when you have a system where millions, literally millions and millions of dollars are flowing to the owners of coffee shops, restaurants, fast food joints, for what? For what? Like, there doesn't seem to be any kind, there have been no statistics released by this city on how it's working.
No.
We don't know how much money is flowing to these retailers.
Well, it's interesting.
All we know is it's millions of dollars.
Brad West mentioned recycling. So you go back 20 years, we didn't have recycling. You know, they didn't have the blue box program. I just drove into work when it's recycling day in Victoria. There's blue boxes everywhere. And the amount of blue boxes and recycling you see now on the curb is just, 10 times more than it was 10 years ago. So people are buying into that program in a big way. And it's, you know, whether it's working on it, it's definitely reducing the amount that's going in the landfill, for sure. And Victoria and other municipalities have bought into recycling in a huge way. They're not going to buy into this cup fee.
Okay, I know you heard my conversation about the robot waiter and whether you should tip a robot, right? So this happened in Vancouver, customer not happy. She's served by a robot in a Vancouver restaurant and then asked for a tip. In Vegas, there's a bar that has robot bartenders. Same thing, guys. And why am I tipping a robot?
Yeah.
So this is like the tip creep. Have you noticed that? There's more tip requests?
Oh, yeah. You mentioned, I mean, you look at the tip offerings you get start at 15% and then go as high as 30%.
Yeah.
And you're labeled like 15%, great. 25%, fantastic. You know, with the word at 30%, you're incredible.
Yeah.
You know, trying to stroke your ego if you tip more. In the beginning of the pandemic, I made a conscious effort to tip more because to keep these businesses afloat, to keep people at work. And I'm still tipping at a high rate, but I would not tip a robot.
Okay.
I'll tip a waiter or a waitress because they don't make a lot of money, but they do get by. Tips are very important to them. And that's the whole reason for tipping, if it's good service.
There's two elements to it. There's the tip inflation or tipflation, as they call it, where the requested or suggested tip amount is going up continually. And then there's what they call the tip creep. Like, so the number of or different type of businesses that ask you for a tip is expanding as well. So have a listen to this clip about a customer in the drive-through here of a fast food joint. Listen to this.
I get up to the pay window and she's like, how much you want a tip? And I'm just like, what? And she's like, yeah, did you want to leave a tip? And she's like pointing to them. And I was like, oh no, not today. And then I just felt really uncomfortable. But like, homegirl, what am I going to tip you for? I'm in the drive-thru.
Yeah, so
oh
she's in.
God.
She's in the drive-thru and you get asked for a tip.
Well, the person asking for the tip probably isn't making a lot of money.
Well, yeah, minimum wage.
Yeah, so, I mean, I can certainly see the argument you tip to boost that person's income. But these others, so you mentioned dry cleaners.
Well, yeah.
They're asking for a tip?
Yeah, I've heard this. I've heard that some do.
I've never understood what prices in dry cleaning are based on. Ever. I mean, they don't post the prices. You just say, do my jacket and they come back.
Or you get ask for a tip at a get an oil change.
No.
You ever had that happen?
Like, no. I personally, I tie tips to the amount the person who's serving me makes. And if I know they're making a low wage, I'm going to tip them. If it's
so, it's not based on service; it's based on what you perceive to be their wage.
Well, and service. I mean, if they're a horrible server, then I don't think you're going to get a big tip. But if you're just some young person just trying to get through,
well,
you know, sure, tip them.
I mean, in some way, you can't blame people for asking.
No. Well, that's unusual.
Well, do you blame the worker or the guy who owns the restaurant? Because this is a management decision.
Yeah, no,
right? you're allowed to ask for the tip.
I've not seen that situation before, being asked for a tip, but verbally. But when you're given,
I'm talking about the prompt on the keypad.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's different than the clip you just played of the server actually asking for a tip.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's a little different.
It's Baldry's Beat. Phone lines are open 604-280-9898, *9898 on your cell. Al in Coquitlam. Hi, Al. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Personally, I think a 25-cent fee should be gone towards a recycling program that both Tim Hortons and Starbucks should be responsible for. Every public garbage can I look in is full of their cups. I mean, this is, it's frankly, in my mind, it's completely out of hand, and they should be paid to be responsible for collecting those cups and recycling them. I mean, it's, to me, in and of itself, is a huge problem.
Yeah, well, you know, if there was a, thanks for the call. I mean, if the program did have some sort of dedicated revenue stream that actually resulted in more recycling, I don't know, maybe there'd be more public support for it. But
yeah, but you're right. There were no benchmarks with this cup fee. There was no measurable outcomes with this.
Yeah.
And that's what you need to have. And that's why, you know, people have bought into the recycling program.
Yeah.
In most municipalities.
Sure.
You know, again, 20 years ago, you didn't see the blue boxes and the cardboard piled up on the curbs every second Wednesday or whatever the day is in your neighborhood, but you do see it now.
The way it works now is the money flows directly to the retailers, and those retailers are encouraged to spend that money on recycling or put in a dishwasher to bring in a cup share program. And some have.
Yep.
Some have, but not many. I mean, I think it's a very small minority of places that have actually done that.
Well, remember,
so most are just pocketing the money.
For 2 years in the pandemic, you weren't allowed to bring your own cup in.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, a lot of places won't fill your cup. At least that's what I've heard.
Yeah, that's starting to change, though.
Jennifer in Vancouver. Hi.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I run a recycling company here in Vancouver, and all we do is coffee shop waste. So we pick up the waste from the coffee shops, and we teach them how to use that 25-cent fee on each single-use cup that they sell, and fund our recycling program directly. So I hear what your last caller was saying is, you know, that type of thing should exist, and that's what we've done. And I can tell you that, you know, the amount of coffee shops in Vancouver that have started doing it is not quite enough. You know, we definitely need more coffee shops using this fee for its intended purpose, and that is to keep cups out of landfill.
Yeah, okay, so that's very interesting. I'm glad you called in, Jennifer. Yeah. So when you collect these used coffee cups, what happens to them?
Yeah, so we send them into the conventional, traditional recycling system that we have access to curbside here in BC. Recycle BC's, you know, got a really great, fantastic service, curbside. But commercial coffee shop owners just don't have access to that same, you know, that same program. It's a curbside program for residents. It's not a commercial program. They're responsible for their own recycling. And so because the traditional recycling companies do not want those cups, because it's such a mess. There's, other waste in all of these recycling bins. There's a big puddle of coffee at the bottom at the end of the day, and the barista goes to take out that bag and put it in the recycling bin. The recyclers can't take that. They don't want it. There's a problem there. It's a mess.
Yeah.
So when you sort the cups, we have these stackers. We have these three tubes. They mount on the wall. It's a stainless steel tube. It gives the customer a spot to pour out their liquid, stack their cup, stack their lid. That's the mess-free separation that these processors of the cups that recycle it for our curbside programs, that's the kind of thing they want. They want relatively clean cups.
And have you seen your business go up since the cup fee came in? Like, are more restaurants doing that?
Really not as much as we had expected with the cup fee. It's we have 14 coffee shops on board, and we expected the coffee shop owners to say, okay, you know what, we've got this fee coming in, and we expected a lot of them to step up. It's really the green-minded ones that kind of have gone, okay, wow, here's the money to do this thing finally, and so let's just put it where it's intended to go.
Okay. Thank you for the call.
Bit of recycling 101 there, you know?
Yeah.
How it actually works.
Oh, I'm really grateful for that call because...
Good for Jennifer. Okay. But her point that there's not a lot of buy-in from these restaurants.
That's it, right.
And that's the problem. If the program's not working and people aren't participating, is it time to try something else?
Yeah, so these restaurants, it doesn't sound like a lot of coffee shops are calling Jennifer's company and saying, hey, let's set up a recycling program. Awesome, we got all this extra money. Let's go for
14
it.
14 companies. Yeah, 14 coffee shops.
Not
out of
many.
Hundreds of coffee shops,
yeah.
You would think. So not a big buy-in on a program that's eventually going to be scrapped.
Right.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.